Welcome back to part two of Kenny's story. Now, we finished last time, and Kenny, you just announced that you'd gone from selling DVDs to gambling and poker, so do tell us more.
Yeah, so I started off doing these no-risk bets, and at the same time I was getting into poker. I bought quite a few books and actually found I was pretty good at it. Obviously we're doing it online. Started actually going to the casino in Glasgow as well, the Riverboat, which was been there 4 or 5 times. That was quite an experience. Never won a lot of money, but it was more a night out just to get away from it. But the online stuff, it was great because honest to God, there's so many idiots about there. If you just stick to the obviously with poker, you've got all sorts of charts. And you had the percentages, and I'm not saying it would tell you when to fold or whatever, but it gave you the odds of you hitting. Now, if you were waiting for a flush, you knew the odds.
Yeah.
And you could work it out with the amount of money in the middle, if it was worth you calling that or not. So the worst thing you could do when you're playing poker was drink. So if you didn't drink and you just sat up, especially on a Friday night, Saturday night, because people would come in from the pub.
Yeah, okay. And they
would sit in and play poker, and you'd just sit quietly, and you'd make some good money. So I was doing that. I remember one tournament, it was a 50 grand tournament. I started at 7 o'clock in the Sunday night. I don't know, there was thousands and thousands and thousands in it. And I got down to the final table.
So
this was at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was meant to be going to work at 7 o'clock in the morning that particular day. And I think I finished sixth or something, and I maybe got, let's say, I got 2 grand, and the winner got about 30 grand, but it opened my eyes.
Yeah.
I then moved on to casinos, and again, casinos were great when they first came out online, because the offers were just so weighted. In my eyes, in my favour, a lot of people, when they would say they deposited 10 quid into a casino and they got a 10 quid bonus, they would just sit and do 20 pence bets, and eventually they would lose it. Any big wins they would get, it's not really reflected. So what I would do, I would set up on a night, I would set up 10 casinos and I would deposit 100 quid. Get a 100 quid bonus, because most of them are doing 100% bonuses. And I would just hit a slot at £9 a spin. Now, the money could be gone in 60 seconds. I could blow 200 quid in 60 seconds. Or at £9 a spin, you can win 1,000 quid, just like that. So the strategy was you would go for the big style, £9 a spin. Or whatever, whatever the slot was set up to, because you could adjust the bet to suit whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
And I couldn't care less if I lost, 5 out of 6, because the 6th one I was cashing out big. That was my, so say for instance, that £9 of spending, I got my balance up to 1,600 quid. I would then find a slot that I could play at let's say 20 pence a spin. I would set up autoplay, so I could tell it to play 1,000 hands or 1,000 spins at 20 pence a spin. So basically I'd won this big amount, and I was protecting it by reducing my bet. So you would eke out the wagering requirement, because all these casinos had a wagering requirement. If you put 100 quid in and you got 100 quid bonus, you probably had to do £2,000 worth of bets before you could withdraw anything.
Okay.
So I mean, there was loads of people doing it. Like I say, there was a forum, and we actually met up a few times as well, once in London, once in Birmingham. There was lots of guys making a living out of this. And what they were doing as well, they were playing it in their wife's name, because at that time you could play casinos in your name and you could open an account in your wife's name. Mm. I opened an account in my brother's name. And then my mate seen what I was doing. He says, could you come and do it for me? So I went and done it for him. And it was just kind of snowballing, and I was making good money.
So you're making money for your friends and family?
Yeah, so yeah. And they would get a cut and I would take whatever. I mean, ethically, was it right? I don't know. I didn't really care at that point, to be honest. And then I said, I need to get smarter, because I'm spending half my time in other people's houses here. So what we'd done was, I know it's commonplace now, but back then I think the software was called Log Me In.
Oh, and
you could remote into people's laptops.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I done. I just sat at my house and, I had my brother and a mate and a couple of other mates, and I would spend the whole day gambling. And I've kind of missed a bit out there. Actually, what had happened was Compaq announced that they were shutting down the factory. And I took my redundancy. First chance I could, I just took it, because I didn't want to be in a shutdown situation. Mm. Everybody's pessimistic, and so I went in the first wave. So I'd taken my redundancy. My wife was due my third child, and unfortunately my dad was dying of cancer at that point, so I'd already decided that I was going to take 6 months off regardless. And I was gambling away, and the 6 months just turned into maybe 3 years.
Oh, gosh.
And nobody was never really batting an eyelid. I mean, the bizarre thing was, I never really told mum and dad what I'd done, but they never really asked either.
They asked either. Okay.
No, and my brothers knew, and people knew, and I don't know, I just got on with it.
You were making enough, obviously, to live.
Yeah, I was making enough. Yeah, making enough. More than enough. And I had some great night outs as well. But the problem was, it starts to eat into you. And I moved into American sports as well. So again, this was similar. It was mostly baseball, basketball, college football, college basketball. Didn't really touch NFL because there's not that many games, but there was opportunities in America as well with reload bonuses. We ended up making a name for it called, so there's a company called Bodog, one of the big casinos or sports books over in America. And we would constantly do reload bonuses, and we called it Bodogging. You were just you're trying to lose the money. Or even if you cashed out, they would just give you another reload because they wanted the money in. So I ended up living American time as well, up to 2 and 3 in the morning, and spending half my day watching, I think at the time it was Satana Sports, because they had all the baseball and the college football. And it was just, the benefit of it was, you get to see your kids growing up, you get to take them to school and nursery, and you could pick and choose when you wanted to do it. It worked well, but all things do, they come to an end. And once you've done all the offers and all the respectable bookmakers and casinos, you start going down the food chain. And I started to go down the food chain. And there was one chain of bookmakers in America that cost me $22,000. I can't remember if it was dollars or pounds. Mm. And it didn't kill me, but it made me sit back and think. There was a couple of others as well within a couple of weeks.
Mm.
And I just kind of woke up one morning and I'd lost my bottle. What I had left, I thought, do you know what? I don't really want to risk that anymore, because there's too many bookmakers are going under or are just making the cash out terms impossible. And they were wanting documentation, and then they were wanting documentation to be verified by, a solicitor or something. And then they were saying things like, well, actually, we've noticed that there's 2 or 3 people in your area that are playing, and these are the only people in Scotland. You know, they were trying to catch you out. If you made money,
They were
trying to catch you out.
So the good times were going, effectively.
Yeah. Basically, all the wagering requirements are going up.
Right, okay.
But listen, don't get me wrong, I mean, the two biggest wins I had in single spins, I had £10,000 once, twice.
Right.
On Jack's or Better Poker, a tenner a spin and £10,000 win.
Wow.
You know, and it's, I mean, it's that's probably how I fell into stocks and shares.
Well, I was going to say, yes, it brings you on to that. I mean, so
yeah.
You were obviously following trends. Everything was new, wasn't it? Novel. And you obviously, sounds to me like you were doing quite well at following the trends and what was new and taking advantage of that. And obviously that then, you know, moves away kind of thing and goes somewhere else. And so I wondered how that translated into stocks, is sort of following trends, but also your attitude to risk as well. I mean, if you're getting
a
high risk tolerance.
Yeah, I'm a bottom feeder. So in the day I was a bottom feeder. Hopefully I can get back to that. But
yeah, okay. Yeah.
No, so the bottle went for the gambling. I'm not saying it went, but it was almost like lockdown mode. I was protecting what I had left. Kind of probably had two or three months out and didn't really gamble and just enjoyed life and said, right, what am I going to do now? You know, it's almost I've never really stuck a job more than 7 or 8 years. So I ended up, I got back into electronics, just took the first job. I got an interview for that. It was point of sale stuff, which is like it tells you get McDonald's and Burger King. And,
yeah.
And there was only 4 or 5 years in there, and it was a piece of piss. I loved it. And I got on well with the boss. And I was still doing a bit of gambling in the background, but mostly the risk-free stuff, you know, when I was backing in lane. I'm just laughing. Also, I remember as well now, we also done backing in lane. So there was a guy, I used to work with in Compaq. He used to go to the races every day when he was off. So it was dangerous. So he would be the race course, and we were trying to lay horses during the race. Betfair. I mean, we made a few mistakes, but we made some decent money as well. But
what's he like? Got someone there?
He's on the phone. He's saying the favourite. You know, he's okay. Watching the favourite. He's saying it's sweating up, it's struggling. Lay whatever you can. So you basically try to lay the favourite or the second favourite. You know, especially an odds-on favourite. You know, if it was maybe 1-2.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's not winning, you know. But there's a lag. Obviously, try to put back in a lane in Betfair takes a wee while for it to be accepted. So, but we'd done all right, but it wasn't good for the heart. You know, it wasn't good at all because you're basically getting live commentary from him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh no, I'm not doing this. So yeah, I done the risk free stuff for a wee while, and I had the job. And it just so happened one of the companies that came in were doing some work for, worked in the naval base at Fairs Lane. And I'd done a few bits and pieces for them. I get talking to the guy and he's like, that's a shame, we've actually, we just closed a job and you'd have been ideal for it. And I was like, all right, well, I'll give you my CV just for future reference. And I gave him the CV, and about 2 hours later he said, we've actually got the letter to send out to the guy, but we've, you know, to accept the job. But we've held it off. Can you come in tomorrow? And I was like, right, okay. So I did, and I got offered the job there and then. And again, that was a fantastic opportunity. I mean, I worked in the submarine simulators, so basically, the Stuart class simulators in Fairs Lane we were responsible for, and these simulators were great. And the good thing was, it was only myself and that particular time one other engineer, so it was all new to me, it was all new to him. You know, there was a lot of snags, you know, it was a full-on day and you were really, really busy.
Yeah.
And probably for 5 or 6 years, I mean the money was great. You know, I moved up to Helensburgh, and you know, everyone was pretty good. I've kind of missed out the bit about AIM, but you know that story anyway, from previous podcasts. But I don't know, if my brain's not getting taxed, I get irritated, and the simulators were running that well. You were just sitting, you know, twiddling your thumbs.
Right, later on, yeah, okay.
Yeah, the last couple of years, and yeah, I was picking. There was the office I worked in, no windows, you know, it was for security reasons, and there was ended up being 4 guys in there, and it was probably no bigger than your living room, you know, so.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't a great environment.
Yeah.
There was one guy in particular I didn't go on with, and it was a bit of a love-hate relationship, but I don't know. I started getting involved in a few projects in the AIM. I was doing bits and pieces for a few companies because I'm quite handy with documents and presentations, and it just kind of sort of snowballed. And as I said in a previous podcast, I just took the jump last May to and it was a pretty secure job. I mean, I could have done that job the rest of my days. I might have murdered somebody in the office, but I could at least have done it. But and that sort of takes me up to date. But yeah, just wow. To jump back, obviously, I went from the gambling into AIM, and it just felt right. I stumbled upon ADVFN, and it just felt like I was right back at home. And I mean, I love researching and stuff like that. So at that particular time, I was getting right into stocks and finding stuff that nobody else can be asked looking for. I probably still do that to this day. Mm. But again, I made a good bit of money, but it all came crashing down. So I suppose now it's 5-6 years when I was loving the job up in the base. So I just fell out with him, and I wasn't in it at all. It's really on the last couple of years I've came back to it and got involved. So yeah, it's not your standard your career path.
I had no idea about that. I knew about the Navy thing, but not about the previous stuff or the gambling. No, it's
not. Would I change it? Probably not. I don't think I would. It's funny because the kids, just I know I've been speaking for ages, but the kids remember. I remember lying in the bath one night, and I had this software, paid for it, and it basically was to catch out bookmakers in America. They were called squares and circles, and basically a circle moved a price quickly and a square moved it slowly. So you were trying to jump on the one side of the bet and jump on the other side of the bet with a sharp bookie and a not so sharp bookie. That's probably the best way to describe it. Mm. And you're trying to jump on one side and jump on the other side and make some profit in the middle. And sometimes you got an opportunity, if the scores come in right, you could actually make in both sides, because say it was like -7, +7, that was the, for a college football game, that was the spread. Say the star quarterback was out, and all of a sudden it would go to +10 on the other side or something. You would try and jump in the +10 and take the -7 before the bookmakers changed it all. Mm. So if they finished 8 points between the game, you would win on both sides, because you had -7, so that side of the bet won, and you had +10 on the other side of the bet. It's kind of hard to explain, but back to the original story. So we had this software, and I remember this was near the end as well. I was lying in the bath, and I remember Callum, my oldest son, coming through the laptop, because it was flashing, it was going mental, because obviously something was happening in one of the games. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of thinking, is this really what I want my kids doing, bringing through my laptop to tell me that the software that I'd paid, paying for, was, giving me opportunities. So, but fortunately, he despises gambling now. He's over 18 now, so he's never put a bet on in his life, and he doesn't. I don't know. Maybe he's just watched what was going on in the house, and didn't think it was not for him. So he's in the Navy now, so he's probably made a wise decision. But yeah. So listen, there's probably plenty of guys out there with stories.
Oh yeah, so, I'm sure there are.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it takes a wee bit of. I mean, there's quite a few of my mates I've got up here now that don't know this story. Obviously I moved into a new town and nobody really knows you, so I don't really tell them that much. But now I'm going to share it with God knows how many thousands of people. But
well, yeah, exactly.
So I don't think you're getting away with it, because you're coming next.
Well, I'm a bit younger than you, so I have probably less of a story to tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Well, you've bared your soul, so it's only fair that I bear mine, isn't it, in the next one?
Yeah.
But, I'm interested to see how long you stick at this next phase, then, whether it takes you you know, to your grave, so to speak, or whether, you know, you move on to something else. But
Listen, I'm tired of reinventing the wheel. This is
right. Yeah. Okay.
This is it. I think I like getting up in the morning and not having to answer to arseholes at work. Sometimes I like being my own boss, and it kind of, I think it's just the right time in my life for me. There's tons of opportunities out there, and once you start speaking to people, and you actually find that these CEOs and directors and chairman or whatever, they're just ordinary people like me and you. Just because they're a CEO doesn't make them, you know, like the king or the queen or whatever. Like that. They're just ordinary people. Yeah, they can maybe talk a good game and talk better than me. But there's definite opportunities out there. I'm doing this until my theory in life is I'm not going to walk into the grave. I'm going to crash into it. I'm not going to tiptoe. So
okay,
I'll probably live life to the extreme. Probably don't look after myself as well as I should. So, but I think I'm 48 next month. So, I think I really should start looking after myself, because it was only.
Are you less risky now than you were?
No. I still probably get the same attitude. I'm talking about my health and. So I mean, it was only a couple of years ago I was running 10Ks and things like that. You know, and the weight I've put on in the last year is just, it's not good. So
I need to see a picture of you, like, before then.
Yeah. Do you want a naked one or do you want a clothed
not
one, Mark?
Not really, no. I prefer clothes on, I think, yeah.
Right, okay.
Or, you know, in a running vest, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, Speedos. So I've got one with Speedos.
Oh, right.
I'm only kidding. Right, I think, listen. Talk long enough, and I know I've got a busy week coming up. We're trying to tie up a few other guys. We've got Derek Liu, who's the chairman of Blue Star Capital. I've actually just had a WhatsApp message from him while we've been talking. So obviously I don't think he's based in the UK at the moment. So I think he's maybe Canada. I'm not. We'll find out from the podcast. So we're just trying to find a time. Suitable for all three of us, and obviously he's a bit of an esports guru, and obviously I don't know about yourself, but I mean in Facebook every third or fourth post in my Facebook feed is all esports. It's just it's just taken off. I must admit I really like Blue Star Capital. I think it's just treading along quite nicely, and I think if there's a 10 bagger in the making, I think Blue Star's definitely in that bracket. So it is, and hopefully we get Derek on, and he can give us a lowdown in esports.
And what esports is, because I have no idea what that is. So that will be interesting to get him on if we can.
Yeah, definitely. And we're putting the feelers out. A few investors have approached us, so I think we've approached Eve Sleep. And I've had a bit of response for them, so hopefully we might try and get them on at some point. And I've put a few feelers out to other companies, so hopefully we can get another four or five this week. Because, like I say, just to repeat, man, I know we've done it earlier on in the podcast, but we don't charge nothing for this, so it's basically a platform for anyone to come on and just tell us your story. I think that's key.
That's it. That's exactly it. Yeah.
But I'm all talked out, Mark. I've had enough. You can talk now.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, that's. I'm pleased that you bared everything there, Kenny. That was a big insight, and it's nice though. I think for people to understand a bit about the characters. You know, me and you.
Definitely.
So know what we are, and we are the sort of ordinary people who. We've ordinary lives, but we've all got a different story to tell, and that's what Market Musings is all about, just telling different stories, as you say. So thank you for that. And
Spot on. Right.
All right.
I'd like to say I'm going for a beer, but I've stopped drinking, so...
Yeah, that's your usual thing, it's beer o'clock, but not for Kenny anymore, eh?
No, unfortunately.
Probably for the best, eh?
Yeah, cool.
Right. All right, speak to you later. Bye.